The 8 shillings lasted 3 days and 4 nights. After my bad experience in the Waterloo Road, I moved eastward and spent the next night in a lodging house in Pennyfields. This was a typical lodging house, like scores of others in London. It had accommodation for between 50 and 100 men, and was managed by a deputy. A deputy for the owner, that is, for these lodging houses are profitable concerns, and are owned by rich men. We slept 15 or 20 in a dormitory. The beds were again cold and hard, but the sheets were not more than a week from the wash, which was an improvement. The charge was 9 pence or 1 shilling. In the shilling dormitory, the beds were 6 feet apart instead of 4, and the terms were cash down by 7 in the evening, or out you went. Downstairs, there was a kitchen common to all lodgers, with free firing and a supply of cooking pots, tea basins, and toasting forks. There were 2 great clinker fires, which were kept burning day and night the year through. The work of tending the fires, sweeping the kitchen, and making the beds was done by the lodgers, in rotation. One senior lodger, a fine Norman-looking stevedore named Steve, was known as head of the house, and was arbiter of disputes and unpaid chucker-out. I liked the kitchen. It was a low-ceiled cellar deep underground, very hot and drowsy with coke fumes, and lighted only by the fires, which cast black velvet shadows in the corners. Ragged washing hung on strings from the ceiling. Red-lit men, stevedores mostly, moved about the fires with cooking pots. Some of them were quite naked, for they had been laundering and were waiting for their clothes to dry. At night, there were games of nap and draughts and songs. "I'm a chap what's done wrong by my parents" was a favourite, and so was another popular song about a shipwreck. Sometimes late at night, men would come in with a pail of winkles they'd bought cheap and share them out. There was a general sharing of food, and it was taken for granted to feed men who were out of work. A little pale, wizened creature, obviously dying, referred to as Poor Brown, been under the doctor and cut open 3 times, was regularly fed by the others. 2 or 3 of the lodgers were old-age pensioners. Till meeting them, I had never realised that there are people in England who live on nothing but the old-age pension of 10 shillings a week. None of these old men had any other resource whatever. One of them was talkative, and I asked him how he managed to exist. He said, "Well, there's 9 pence a night for your kip, that's 5 and 3 pence a week, and there's 3 pence on Saturdays for a shave, that's 5 and 6, and say you has a haircut once a month for 6 pence, that's another 3 halfpence a week, so you has about 4 and 4 pence for food and baccy." He could imagine no other expenses. His food was bread and margarine and tea. Towards the end of the week, dry bread and tea without milk, and perhaps he got his clothes from charity. He seemed contented, valuing his bed and the fire more than food. But with an income of 10 shillings a week to spend money on a shave, it is awe-inspiring. All day I loafed in the streets, east as far as Wapping, west as far as Whitechapel. It was queer after Paris. Everything was so much cleaner and quieter and drearier. One missed the scream of the trams and the noisy, festering life of the back streets and the armed men clattering through the squares. The crowds were better dressed and the faces comelier and milder and more alike, without that fierce individuality and malice of the French. There was less drunkenness and less dirt, and less quarrelling, and more idling. Knots of men stood at all the corners, slightly underfed, but kept going by the tea and 2 slices which the Londoner swallows every 2 hours. One seemed to breathe a less feverish air than in Paris. It was the land of the tea urn and the labour exchange, as Paris is the land of the bistro and the sweatshop. It was interesting to watch the crowds. The East London women are pretty. It is the mixture of blood, perhaps, and Limehouse was sprinkled with Orientals, Chinamen, Chittagonian Lascars, Dravidians selling silk scarves, even a few Sikhs, come goodness knows how. Here and there were street meetings. In Whitechapel, somebody called the Singing Evangel undertook to save you from hell for the charge of sixpence. In the East India Dock Road, the Salvation Army were holding a service. They were singing, "Anybody here like sneaking Judas?" to the tune of "What's to be done with the drunken sailor?" On Tower Hill, two Mormons were trying to address a meeting. Round their platform struggled a mob of men, shouting and interrupting. Someone was denouncing them for polygamists. A lame, bearded man, evidently an atheist, had heard the word God and was heckling angrily. There was a confused uproar of voices. "My dear friends, if you would only let us finish what we were saying." "That's right, give them a say. Don't get on the argue." "No, no, you answer me. Can you show me God? You show him me, then I'll believe in him." "Oh, shut up, don't keep interrupting of him. Interrupt yourself, thing polygamists. Well, there's a lot to be said for polygamy. Take the thing women out of industry anyway." "My dear friends, if you would just..." "No, no, don't you slip out of it. Have you seen God? Have you touched him? Have you shook hands with him? Oh, don't get on the argue, for Christ's sake, don't get on the argue." Etc., etc. I listened for 20 minutes, anxious to learn something about Mormonism, but the meeting never got beyond shouts. It is the general fate of street meetings. In Middlesex Street, among the crowds at the market, a draggled, down-at-heel woman was hauling a brat of 5 by the arm. She brandished a tin trumpet in its face. The brat was squalling. "Enjoy yourself," yelled the mother. "What do you think I brought you out here for and bought you a trumpet and all? Do you want to go across my knee, you little bastard? You shall enjoy yourself." Some drops of spittle fell from the trumpet. The mother and the child disappeared, both bawling. It was all very queer after Paris. The last night that I was in the Pennyfields lodging house, there was a quarrel between two of the lodgers. A vile scene. One of the old-age pensioners, a man of about 70, naked to the waist, he'd been laundering, was violently abusing a short, thick-set stevedore who stood with his back to the fire. I could see the old man's face in the light of the fire, and he was almost crying with grief and rage. Evidently something very serious had happened. The old-age pensioner. "You!" The stevedore. "Shut your mouth, you old before I set about you." The old-age pensioner. "Just you try it on, you fucking hooligan. I'm 30 years older than you, but it wouldn't take much to make me give you one as it'd knock you into a bucket full of piss." The stevedore. "Oh, and then perhaps I wouldn't smash you up after, you old shit." Thus, for 5 minutes, the lodgers sat round, unhappy, trying to disregard the quarrel. The stevedore looked sullen, but the old man was growing more and more furious. He kept making little rushes at the other, sticking out his face and screaming from a few inches distant, like a cat on a wall, and spitting. He was trying to nerve himself to strike a blow, and not quite succeeding. Finally, he burst out, "Arsehole! That's what you are! A fucking arsehole! Take that in your dirty gob and suck it, you fat... Oh, God, I'll smash you for what I've done with you. A shit, that's what you are. A son of a bitch whore. Lick that, you fat... That's what I think of you, you black bastard." Whereat he suddenly collapsed on a bench, took his face in his hands, and began crying. The other man, seeing that public feeling was against him, went out. Afterwards I heard Steve explaining the cause of the quarrel. It appeared that it was all about a shilling's worth of food. In some way the old man had lost his store of bread and margarine, and so would have nothing to eat for the next 3 days, except what the others gave him in charity. The stevedore, who was in work and well-fed, had taunted him. Hence the quarrel. When my money was down to 1 and 4p, I went for a night to a lodging house in Bow, where the charge was only 8p. One went down an area and through an alleyway into a deep, stifling cellar, 10 feet square. 10 men, navvies mostly, were sitting in the fierce glare of the fire. It was midnight, but the deputy's son, a pale, sticky child of 5, was there playing on the navvy's knees. An old Irishman was whistling to a blind bullfinch in a tiny cage. There were other songbirds there, tiny, faded things that had lived all their lives underground. The lodgers habitually made water in the fire to save going across a yard to the lavatory. As I sat at the table, I felt something stir near my feet, and looking down, saw a wave of black things moving slowly across the floor. They were black beetles. There were six beds in the dormitory, and the sheets, marked in huge letters stolen from number Bow Road, smelt loathsome. In the next bed to me lay a very old man, a pavement artist, with some extraordinary curvature of the spine that made him stick right out of bed, with his back a foot or two from my face. It was bare, and marked with curious swirls of dirt, like a marble tabletop. During the night a man came in drunk and was sick on the floor close to my bed. There were bugs, too, not so bad as in Paris, but enough to keep one awake. It was a filthy place. Yet the deputy and his wife were friendly people, and ready to make one a cup of tea at any hour of the day or night.